Hey, how you guys doing? It's producer from Brothers Comics. Welcome to the Marvel Hacks. This is episode 5 of our X-Men 97 recap, y'all. The show's moving at a heavy pace. We are behind the show. Welcome, Brother Beavis. What's happening here?
We're behind on all this stuff, right?
Hey, what's yeah. up? Yeah, they just aired episode 6, and we're, you know, again, if you're listening to us, you've seen it, so we'll talk about it in a spoiler-ish mode, but we'll, you know, we'll recap it later. And that's what we were talking about before I hit record. So our original plan was to go through the episodes, you know, one by one, which we've been doing. Then they aired episode 4, which was Life, Death, Part 1, but in front of that was the Mojo story with Jubilee and Sunspot. And then on the back end of that, I wouldn't even call it the back half, the back end of that was the story of Life, Death, Part 1 with Storm and Forge, their building relationship, you know, whatever. And then the appearance of the demon, and then it cut off. And it's like, oh, okay. And then in the episode order, then it was episode 5, the one we're about to review. Remember It is the title. And then they were like, okay, so episode 6 is Life, Death, Part 2. And then you get to Life Death, episode 6, and it does not start off with Life Death, brother.
No, it does not.
So we were just talking. It was like, well, we thought they were going to give, you know, I would like to say in black culture, Storm her lemonade moment from Beyonce and, you know, kind of, you know, allow her to go through the story and come out of it. And she does, but we didn't get it in a 22-minute segment. We got it in like a 7 to 8 minute segment on top of the 7 to 8 minute segment from Life, Death, Part 1. That'd be fair.
Maybe they had like different production teams, and they were like, some of them didn't get the memo that it's 30 minutes instead of 22 minutes, and so they got all these part episodes, and now they're like, oh man, now we gotta stitch these together.
Yeah, and again, these shows have been fairly good in the sense of staying on theme, except for these two episodes. You know, like they had these, I said, what do we call it? You know, the backstory of an annual. And that's what they did with Life Death. Again, mm-hmm. No matter what you feel about the story, and I know some people like it more than others, we talked about, like, well, it's not a no one shit story. There's a lot of reading, there's a lot of words, and it's, you know, it's kind of a weird story in the middle of the comic books that they were going on at the same time, too. So if that's what you were looking for, they nailed that part.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny because this just occurred to me. The episode we're gonna talk about here is the Frank Quitely era,
yes,
and Grant Morrison era, which had like a distinct look and feel, almost like a different book. And I think the Life Death book with Barry Windsor Smith, you know, that was, even though he had done other books as well, but like that was like, it was like reading a different book, you know. It was almost like completely separate. Yeah. So
yeah, it's, I mean, go ahead. Sorry,
I did breathe a sigh of relief. I believe we are going to be spared from the X-Men 201 moment. Well, yes. I'm going to be spared.
Cyclops will maintain.
You might get kicked out, but not by somebody with it. Spoiler.
And again, lemonade moment. And spoiling episode 6 if you haven't seen it. But again, why are you listening to this? Storm in her original costume, you know, the Dave Cockrum version. Well done, folks. Like, well done. Didn't see it coming. Hadn't even considered it as an option.
Right.
Well done.
Because they teased the Mohawk look, and like it seemed like that was going to be the featured kind of, that was like going to be her transformation, and that was sort of her transition. Mm-hmm. They're going in reverse. Like they're going from the you know, the Jim Lee era costume, back through the Mohawk Storm, and now back to the original look. And are we going to get our giant size X-Men team?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they just got to, they've shown, I think they've teased Colossus in this, but they got to get him out of that wife beater and jeans. Like, yeah. I still don't understand why he can never be in costume.
Yeah, that's funny. All right. So
they're
he's
like, his rights are tied up like the Hulk. Like, oh, we can do all the X-Men, but not Colossus, because we optioned the Colossus movie back in the day. It was going to be Ivan Drago, and it never came to pass.
God. So and he needs a reboot because of how bad the Deadpool movies have treated him. That's, he needs like a full on reboot. But yeah, okay. All right, so we're going to get into it tonight. I think before we get to whichever slide that is in this presentation, if you're on YouTube, if you were a fan of the Frank Quitely Grant Morrison era, you're gonna want to hit pause. I'll give you a fair warning before it happens, because we were not. That's 2001. We're both. I'm not quite married yet. You are. No kids for both. So we're in our bags in terms of reading comic books, and that dropped in there like an unwanted bomb. I'll save it for the time. But yeah. All right, here we go. All right, so episodes 5 is Remember It. You know, there's a lot of comic book inspirations here. And again, this is something that we've kind of been talking about ourselves, about how they're condensing, you know, massive comic book stories into 30-some-odd minute episodes. So E for Extinction, probably the basis of primary basis for this one. New X-Men 114 to 116. We do not get Cassandra Nova, thankfully. But yeah, that was one of the bases. Yeah. So we're coming to Grant Morrison stuff, but yeah, you have these books. You had to, because I remember talking about them.
Yeah, I mean, this was, so 2001, you know, now we're through like the 90s, which, you know, had some stuff, but largely is known for the bloated crossovers, the spinoff books, like way too many titles. Mm-hmm. And there's just not like a lot going on. You know, the creative teams, you know, they lost a lot of the creators to Image. And then they put some back together, you know, they got some new talent, then they lost that talent, whatever. So you definitely like felt like the books were kind of floundering. It's one of those things like, you know, probably subconsciously looking for like an out, like, is it really worth going to the store on every Wednesday and getting all these books? Cause like half of them are just awful. And I just keep buying them because I got so many of the other ones. And, you know, so this was like, I don't even know what I'm reading at this point. This was like, I mean, I don't know. Like the whole, this era reads like, yeah, fuck your X-Men. I'm going to write the X-Men I wanted to write. Yeah. Like they completely turned the team upside down. Beast is a cat. Cyclops is just back from the dead. Yeah. You know, whatever. Like it just, this is definitely a new era, and maybe they needed the shakeup and whatever, but this was not my X-Men.
This was possibly, it could have possibly been saved if I could have lived with the Grant Morrison, if it wasn't for the Quitely art.
Yeah, his art is like sucks. Everybody's slightly too wide, and it looks like some like middle school art project, like sculpture that's not quite finished.
Yeah, I took it out of the kiln too early, because their faces are all goofy. And then he's going, we'll get to it here soon, he's going to introduce us to all of these mutants that we don't care about that we're still fucking dealing with.
Yeah.
Which is super annoying to me.
Yeah. Does Glob actually have powers, or is he just...
I think he's just an exos like skeleton thingy. I have no idea. He sucks, basically.
It's like, it was like, we didn't have enough like useless Morlocks. Let's just have a bunch of other useless Morlocks, but just have them like... Let's write books about them.
Yeah. It's like he made this idea. It was like, well, the mutants are all too pretty, so we need to give you this undercurrent of mutants that are not pretty. And so we can make, not even make fun of them, just to like say that there's unpretty people there too. We're coming to it, y'all. All right. So there's that. You know, we talked about this. You know, this was an undersold like little moment in here from what Uncanny 132, where Scott and Jean, as they're doing their interviews for Inside Edition with Trish Tilby there, you know, they tell in this story that after they come back, they were, you know, hiding out. I think it's in Nevada in the book, and I think maybe they said Arizona or Utah in the show. You know, this story about where Jean holds back his power.
They're like one of those Trump states. I don't know.
Yeah. Hey, hold on, Arizona. saved us from a dictatorship. But they referenced this like this story that was very told, you know, that was told in this book before they go get crushed by the Hellfire Club, and that in the back half of that book. But I was like, oh man, that's a deep cut, so to speak. If you hadn't read the books, you could have.
Did they not do this in the original cartoon? Because I kind of thought they did, but I can't.
That he held back her powers.
Yeah, she held his powers back. I thought went to like the I thought they went somewhere out here and did this, but
okay. No, I don't remember.
You cut off like Angel in his Stockton's and probably some high socks.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
he had some great, a couple great costumes, but he had some terrible wardrobe choices.
Yeah, well, he's rich. He can get away with it. But yeah, I thought this was really cool, you know, and we have this, you know, this moment between Gene and Scott, which we'll get to momentarily. Well,
and I thought too, the interesting part was like when they recounted the experience, it was they each had, you know, differing sets of fears and biases and concerns and stuff like that. And so just to get like their inner monologues about what this moment meant to them was, that was like, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, again, as I said this to my daughter, I was like, you know, and we talked about this before, the show is definitely not written for new viewers, essentially. Yeah. They could pick up, but it's really written for, you know, people that are older that had watched the original series all the way through. All right. What's another one? I got this one offline. Rogue's Hellfire Gala gown is Rogue, the date night dress.
Yeah.
From what's that episode, issue one from the 92 reboot or 94 reboot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I thought, I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. And again, got Gambit involved of it. Perfectly okay with that. Then we have this other outfit. I went back and read this book because I just couldn't remember it. One, not a one shit book.
You couldn't remember it. No pun intended.
Yeah, I could not. Yeah, there. Well done. I couldn't remember it, but also, I'm like, it really is just a story thrown in there as well. You know, ironically, when we get to 275 and episode 6, that's exactly where we're laid it into. But this just seemed like it was just an option to just have Jim Lee draw her in this particular outfit.
Well, this was where like she and Polaris had been in, they had gone to the Savage. So this was right before the Muir Island business. And at this point, like Carol was becoming in the forefront of her conscious. And this is like post Siege Perilous, I think. So I think this was the plot where she, like, I don't know whether it was psychic or whatever, but Carol manifested and she had to beat down Carol for supremacy in her own mind. And then they ended up in the Savage Land without powers.
Yeah.
And I think that was actually why she was all pushed up on Magneto.
Yeah.
But in the show, I was like, why does she have to wear this? Like, like we need you. I got a guy you need to go. Like she gets basically trafficked. Or like Mystique, the bad woman, whoever, I don't know if they name drop her, but like she gets trafficked to Magneto and like, you better put these drawers on, girl. He likes a freak. So I was like, why does she have to have ripped up clothes? Like, walk through the bush? Like what happened? Like, I didn't understand why she had to wear this outfit.
Yeah. And again, even in the comic, it's always alluded to, but never said about this massive age difference between these two. I mean, they've gotten her past the idea that she's the teenager in the comic books or in the movies, but here, I mean, she's older. She's old enough to make her own decisions. Quite possibly not when Mystique trafficked her, though. So
that was pre-joining the team, and so she was definitely, it like depicted her like she was like at most 17 at that.
Yeah.
And we, you know, Magneto will never know. I get, well, it depends on how you count it, right? If he really was in World War II, he has earned that white hair, but then I guess he was a baby at one point and regrew back to manhood. So we don't know how old he is. He's not Ian McKellen's age. I don't know,
but he probably should not be dating 20-year-olds.
no.
Yeah. He's got, today's sponsor.
Why is that he in magic his costume and she's in this outfit?
Yeah.
Like, hold on. Let me suit up so I can go paint.
So I can go paint. Good grief. Awful. All right. All right. So here's our episode recap. Magneto. A couple of things before we get to the recap. One, they have made a very obvious and conscious decision to leave Wolverine out of this show
for
6 episodes. I mean, very conscious and deliberate, which is fine because he had more than enough run. I'm fine with that. Okay. Two, the constant team split ups, though, is very Scooby-Doo. Like, all right, so I'm going to take this one, and this one, and go and fight this massive thing that's going on, but I'm going to leave all these other people at home. All right, I guess. But, yeah, this is the group that you put together. And, again, this is just plot armor. They're trying to get these three together for this particular moment, and I get that part. But, yeah, it's kind of funny that they keep splitting the teams up. No, Magneto, Rogue.
But that's also like, you know, that's a blue and gold era team. Mm. You know, that's as well. They would, you know, there would potentially be somebody off doing something in the regular runs, but they blue and gold, they would specifically detail out various people. So didn't bother me.
Yeah. So the A-plot, Magneto, Rogue, and Gambit are headed to Genosha for the celebration of Genosha joining the United Nations. They're going to get some opposition with that. B-plot is the Trish Tilby Inside Edition interview where she's interviewing whoever's left over, which is primarily Beast and Cyclops. And I think Jean and Logan, you know, disappear for those interviews or whatever. I did not like the depiction of Trish Tilby, by the way. Not the just the design, you know, because in the books, you know, she's you know, more comic book attractive, I guess. I didn't really enjoy that.
They didn't sell her as a sympathetic or worthwhile, you know, they didn't sell her as an NPC of the family.
Yeah, she was
just like, here's our, you know, latest narrator of this plot line.
Yeah, gotcha moments of whatever's happening. But anyway, all right, so they're headed there.
Oh, and in the Frank Quitely eras where Beast abruptly breaks up with her, because he's a cat now.
He's a cat, yes.
And he says he might be gay, I guess, to cover up his feelings for her or something. I don't know. It's just, it's another case of like, I'm sorry, what book is this?
Yeah, and I remember we had a literal phone conversation. This is pre-texting, too, that there's one of those episodes where I think Phoenix comes back, and like the last page is like Wolverine saying something to the effects of great googly moogly. Like, it's completely ridiculous, the dialogue. And I remember us having a conversation about this 20 plus years ago. Like, what the, like, we were like, I think that was like the breaking point. Like, you know what? I'm good. I'm just going to take a break until this era is over. Cause I have these books. I dug them out of the crate the other day so my daughter could read them, but man, no thanks. Okay, so they arrive in Genosha. It gave me very much Black Panther vibe here.
Yeah.
With the music and the ship and everybody being like, hey, you know, they're back. Even if you go back and listen to the music where they're flying in, it's very much a Black Panther pull, I think.
I guess canonically, Genosha is the island of Madagascar, which is, I guess, technically part of Africa.
Technically,
I don't know. Yeah, it seemed derivative. It seemed like maybe they were just like, "Well, fuck it, let's just do it."
So. Let's do a direct lift, you know, see if anybody catches it. But yeah, so they come in, and then we get introduced to, you know, the greeting party, which is Nightcrawler and Madeline and. I always get this lady's name, Val Cooper. Yeah, and Val Cooper, and you know, they get there. Mike, they give a very great reintroduction to Nightcrawler. You know, he's well received by Rogue and Gambit. You know, he gets to show his powers off. Like I Nightcrawler's a fave. I think it's probably a little bit on your side as well. At least the, you know, non-super religious version, which I think we've gotten too much into in the later comic books.
We were playing the Marvel superheroes game.
Well, yeah. Look out, that's cops. Look out, cops. That's a long pull from us. Madeline had matriculated over to Genosha after, you know, going off on her own. She figured this is a place that, you know, she could be and she could do some help. And, you know, Nightcrawler is there.
Touch on the faith aspect of him, but it's, you know, it's tamped down. It's not all he is. I mean, yes. And that's fine. It just, the couple appearances he had in the main run, like he was literally in a monastery. I think may have even had a collar on at one point.
Yeah, exactly. It's, and then again, in the comic books, it's gotten way pushed in that direction too. Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, well, that's all he's really defined by now. Except for Sins of Sinister, where they used him to clone him to make all these whatever. Anyway, all right. So here we go. All right. And thanks to Homo Superior Podcast, because they made this slide. We get all these guest appearances in here, and a lot of Grant Morrison, rejects or pulls here. Glob, was that Pyrie or whatever? Like, no, that's basically. So this is where we are. We kind of gave it. Go ahead.
The dance, the whole dance thing at the beginning, like when they first get to the island and multiple man, like, that's not how his powers work.
Hit that slide. But, and then you have, what's his name? The other religious dude that's a little bit nuts.
Oh, Exodus?
Yeah, Exodus.
Yeah.
You got him, you know, doing the shimmy shim too.
It's like, what is happening here?
I mean, again, this is a good way. We've talked about this before, about them to be able to get mutants into this show without having to, you know, tell a version of a story there. Oh, yeah. Pixie, Nature Girl. These are all freaking late.
Yeah,
end.
I saw Boom Boom slide in. I was like,
yeah, Boom Boom's in there. Archangel shows up at the Hellfire Gala.
I don't understand why they don't depict Dazzler as blonde, but.
Oh, yeah.
I guess probably because you couldn't tell her from Boom Boom if you did.
Yeah, I guess. It's just, this was not a great era. Like I said, we talked about it a little bit before. It's just not good. So, again, I think we're going to be saved from Cassandra Nova, at least at this point, for the E4 Extinction books. It's that, which is a crazy story in of itself. That gets even crazier as it goes on, you know, where she was his freaking twin or whatever. I'm like, what?
It's called a mama dry, sir.
God damn it. No. I think, like you said before, he just felt he had to put his complete spin on the book, even though it's not necessarily ruined continuity, but definitely character development was just flushed down the toilet.
Yeah. The depiction, you know, to the one degree, like, we finally start to get, like, the begrudging respect between Cyclops and Wolverine, which was probably a long time coming, and to pick them as anything other than rivals for Jean Grey was probably a positive development, but he's getting a Cyclops back from the dead after sacrificing himself to defeat Apocalypse as he rounded up the 12 in a very unsatisfying resolution to that long running story.
Lord.
And then they're like, okay, well, I guess we can just do whatever we want with him. And now it's like, this is like, you know, I guess you would point back to the downfall of Cyclops being when he just dips on Madeline and Nathan. But this is really where the character starts to fall apart. So.
Yeah, and then they gave him these shitty freaking Matrix costumes that they were awful. Like nobody was like, oh yeah, with the big yellow X. Well, like, nobody cared.
And that was the movie costumes, right? You guys like that? You guys like the movie where they just wore leather outfits? So check this out.
Yeah, there's that. And then the secondary mutations are introduced in this era as well, which again is probably a decent story or whatever, but it was used too often. Like it's just. And Cassandra Nova, bro.
So you know she's going to be the villain of the Deadpool movie, right?
No, but that tracks.
She is.
Yeah, no comment. We'll have a whole probably show about that movie when it comes out. I'm going to tell you now, it's probably not going to be positive.
If it's a vehicle to get the X-Men into the fold, I'll take whatever. But that joke has definitely been told. And if this is just another Ryan Reynolds vanity project, I could probably skip it. And basically, like, he's working for the TVA. I've seen the better version of that show already.
Yeah, exactly. And then this book, or this group of books that are going to get to E for Extinction or whatever, it introduced the idea of knocking off all these mutants, which is what needed to happen. Like, it had happened to this point where we have all these, I would call them useless mutants, that we didn't really need, that nobody really cares about. And then, you know, okay, fine, we're going to do that. What they're going to completely retcon, however many years, 20 plus years later, almost 20 years, you know, to try to repopulate them, you know, on Krakoa. And it's like, we didn't need them 6 million mutants, man.
Yeah.
We didn't. Like, what are we doing?
And I think the timeline is No More Mutants comes after this, right?
Yes.
So they killed them all, and then they stripped their powers off. And then we got them all back.
Yeah, it's just I didn't understand that whole bit, and I don't understand why. But yes, this era, not great. The cameos, that's fine. I'm perfectly fine with it. They missed one on here, and I watched it again the other day. Cecilia Reyes is at the Hellfire Ball too.
Doesn't she like phase? Is she not the one? Oh no, so you're telling me it's the Cypher person is the one who phases through Exodus?
Yeah,
I don't know them.
Yeah, no. Cecilia Reyes is at the dance, just dancing. Like, you know, she's on like that platform.
And they, what I was a little surprised by, because they made such a point of showing the original five in the pictures in the mansion, is like Archangel doesn't even like it. They don't even recognize his presence here. Like, and he gets
nothing.
He's not going to be in episode six. Let's just
poor thing. He sucks. Anyway,
he does. I'm not saying he belongs in the story, but. Yeah,
they recognize it fully. All right. So Magneto heads to the Genosha Council, which is kind of giving me vibes of the Quiet Council here, especially when you know who shows up on it. So Sebastian Shaw, Emma Frost, and Moira MacTaggert. We don't know which life this is, but that bitch is there.
And they make a point of like calling her a human and you know, whatever isting her, humanisting her.
There's a slide coming. For stability, they don't use the word king, but we'll use it. Magneto should be the king of Genosha, and he's going to need somebody on his side, you know, a queen's, king's Magneto. Consort.
And you should be Magneto.
Yeah, awful. But yeah, so again, we get introduced to.
Sorry.
We get introduced to. Sebastian Shaw and Emma Frost, Hellfire Club. I wonder if they'll be able to call it the Hellfire Club now on Disney Plus.
The Circle was the Circle Club.
Club, yes. Yeah. I wonder if they'll be able to call it that. And this is what this idea now appealing to Magneto's ego and wanting to be a dictator. That's probably a good idea. You know, other people might not necessarily think it is, but I'm pretty sure they thought that well out. Emma, great. The little bits that we get of her, very kind of bitchy queen, which is what we expect from her. Not hating that part. And Sebastian Shaw just has not updated his wardrobe in 4 years.
Well, none of them have. Like, look, Moira has her old lab coat. And
She does. Dang. And Banshee's on there. We kind of skipped over him. That reason to get him onto the cameo show,
also
too.
Also not in episode six. Yeah. and I'm not as familiar with the story, but after, because I think most of it played out in the New Mutants, and there was never a time where that was going to happen.
Yeah.
But after Magneto becomes the headmaster of the school, I think he gets recruited to be the Gray King of the Hellfire Club. And so I have no idea what the whatever stories transpired between him and these people in that era. But that would be, given where we are in this kind of continuity where we're racing forward into the future, that would fit in here as well if they dropped any hints from that.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, oh, wait a minute, because I think I have an idea where this is headed, which I'll have a thought about too. So there's going to be two. You see what had happened was stories. So when the idea is brought up to Rogue, like, hey, you need to be the queen to kind of essentially keep him in check for going nuts. She has to go tell Gambit. Like her backstory about how this happened. And we kind of alluded to this already from 274. But yes, she gets trafficked by freaking Epstein here over to Magneto. And she winds up spending her time there with him. She almost slipped up too, where when they were going through the markets in Genosha, it was like, yeah, he always said it would be like this. Who you talking? who said? Xavier. Change the subject. You know, and they go through these backstories here, and then Gambit's just burning his cards as she's telling a story. You know, some things are bigger than touch. Yeah. I thought it was actually handled very well, you know, and they didn't weaken Gambit in that moment.
No.
You know, he stayed in character essentially without, you know, doing or saying something that would have been something that character wouldn't have thought or said.
Look, like, I think Gambit's probably the most likely to get Me Too canceled off this team. I thought he handled this turn in the relationship with remarkable maturity.
Yes.
Yeah. No, it was I mean, we'll play it forward, but this was, you know, when this episode was coming on, because you can never, I have not had luck like finding out what the episodes are going to be. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw the title, I was like, didn't Gambit say that? What Gambit story were we telling here?
Right.
And, you know, his big reveal is kind of lame with the role in the Mutant Massacre. And and I keep reading stuff where like, oh, they did the Mutant Massacre story on the X-Men. I'm like, no, they didn't. No. The Mutant Massacre, whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, no, this was like they mashed all the Rogue and Magneto stuff together in a way that didn't make sense. But this whole resolution of the triangle that they've been teasing here was, I thought, very well
handled. Yeah, and again, she was at MegaCon, the voice actress lady for Rogue. Like you could see the maturity in her voice and the character, like over these 20 plus years or whatever since the show went off. But like you can tell. I don't know. Like it's like, oh, her voice sounds like it would if she was before, whereas in the previous show it just sounded more like she was just like this young kid or whatever. Yeah. So even though there's no time frame difference allegedly for the show, it is, at least in terms of how it's being portrayed. I thought this was very well done. We get the freaking Savage Land outfit as much as we could in terms of a Goblin Queen version of it. But yeah, again, any con person want to show up looking like that, hey baby, I ain't coming home no more. All right, here we go. Oh, also, what had happened was back at the mansion. So, Gene is avoiding the interview. Scott's doing that interview, and I guess I don't think I put this slide in here. We probably should talk about it, but she's having this conversation where she talks about the thing about holding back his powers, and they're doing this, you know, kind of in a split screen between her and Cyclops. But as she's having this conversation with Logan, you know, she's, you know, very confused. You know, Cyclops is, you know, in his feelings about, you know, having to give up his son. You know, they haven't been talking. There's all these things going on. But he has been talking. Just not to you. You know. So, Gene got in his mental browser history and found out he had been talking to Madeline on the astral plane or whatever. Not a great bit. But she ain't no better because she out here kissing Logan. What'd you think about this scene?
So the funny part, well, I don't want to say funny, but the first part of it with her and Wolverine, like you said, he's been suppressed from this show. Literally all he's done is the puppy dog look for Gene.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came time to like stand up for Gene or Madeline, like he was like, I can't choose. I'm gonna be over here in the corner. Like, like he didn't do anything. So it was interesting. Like she finally kisses him. This is the car he's been chasing this entire show. And he's like, oh
yeah,
probably shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
It's all right though. Whatever. But, in terms of, you know, this is like we talked about earlier, this is the part where Scott stopped making sense in the comics. And so after he's come back from being dead, like he is very detached and Gene gets worried and he's shut off from her and whatever. Well, it's because he's having, I guess they want to paint it as some sort of therapy with the White Queen, but it was lightweight infidelity, at least, if not more.
Yeah.
But this version, like this actually makes sense. Like in the story, like when she confronts him, like in the comic, like, he has nothing to say, like, whatever, I did it, you know.
Yeah.
Now it's like, look, I'm confused. I don't know who's who. The one thing I do know is she had my child, and my child is gone, and I don't know what to do with that. And so, like, it actually kind of makes sense that he's still, that he has this legitimate, like, issue between Madeline and Gene. And he's conflicted and he's still making bad decisions, but it at least makes sense. And you know, they've gotten to a point in the books in a way that makes a lot more sense than it ever did in the books.
Yeah. It never made sense in the books. Like, I mean, at all. Again, I think this might have been in our, we're not necessarily reading, but following along version of the show. like, oh, okay, so he would enter into a relationship with somebody that's a known manipulator. Oh, she's got to be messing with his mind. Like, I mean, that was the whole story the entire time that they were there together. It was like Emma has to be messing with him because the Cyclops that we knew, loved, and grew up with would never enter into a relationship with that woman.
Do you remember in when they first launched the new X-Men series with Jim Lee, how Psylocke was like messing with him?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they just kind of dropped that story.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, I mean, we, for long time listeners would be like, hey, y'all used to talk about Scott being a horn dog. And he was like, after Jean died, like he was a full on horn dog there for a bit until he winds up, you know, meeting and going this thing with Madeline Pryor, you know? So in that regard, yes.
Lee Forrester. He was rolling through them.
Yeah, he was doing his thing. And so at that point, yes, it would have made sense. But like that whole story and even putting her and him and Emma together for as long as they did, which they did for many years, which was still made no sense. Just, yeah, it never did anything. And then we are seeing Scott's little turn to the dark side. I hope it's not to Racer X, but like, you know, he is hurting and angry about his kid being dead, which he should be, or gone. And he's, you know, that interview with Trish Tilby, he's like, yeah, because you're normal. Like, you wouldn't get it. Like, you know, and he starts to go off, you know, when she brings up, you know, Nathan being gone.
Why did you lie? I'm trying to show you. Why did you lie?
Yeah, and he goes off. And that's great. But also, there's...
They should have got editorial approval before they aired this. I don't know if they're live streaming these interviews or whatever.
Yes, you need to sign this NDA thing with the con. here's my thought. Okay, and I feel like this way going into whenever they get to casting this movie or whatever. I don't think, like, you didn't do what you did in these first few episodes to build this man back up after having him been so terrible in the comic books or whatever. You just kind of got him back to a normal version of himself in the comic books here recently, too, to send him over to the dark side again. So, like, when that movie falls forward, you can't have him, Racer X, killing Xavier, doing all these things, but in the movie, he's your version of Captain America, which is, I think, where we're headed.
Yeah.
But... there's no Disney synergy in that regard. So I don't think we're going to get there, but there's one place I definitely think we're going, but I don't think we're going there.
Yeah. I mean, you turn the team when you don't have any villains left, and they have not burned through zero villains in any sort of movie universe. So there's no reason to go to that.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
And if please do not do AVX. Because that's where, you know, that
didn't help me. Oh, God. God, you wouldn't think. All right. So, yeah. All right. It's the Hellfire Gala, y'all. They didn't call it that, but I know a Hellfire Gala when I see one. And some bald ninja shows up on the spot before they go to the gala. Now, I didn't see it when I watched it originally. I had to catch it on Twitter. Somebody pointed it out. But once you see it, it's impossible to not see.
Yeah, I had read like an article that he was a cameo. So in the scene, I saw it. But
yeah.
I don't know that I would have otherwise.
And he only shows up when bad shit happens on that show, typically.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what a pullback. Now, I know they're doing a What If season 3 that's going to have the X-Men in it. So maybe that, and spinning this forward, how they're going to retcon what's going to happen at the end of this episode, you know?
Yeah. I have a hard time thinking that all of this stands, but we'll see.
So then Watcher shows up right before the Hellfire Gala. This is this whole big event, you know, where, you know, Magneto's going to be crowned the king of Genosha. Rogue shows up. They do some little floaty, dancey, overtly sexual for a Saturday morning cartoon show.
Yeah.
I'm like, what's going on here?
This was Hellfire Gala.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, what's going on? I've never read any of those books, by the way. Like,
I never know. That's the main problem with the new books is like, what is the order? What is the continuity? Like, good luck figuring out, like, you finish a book, good luck finding the sequel to it, or being able to figure out what anybody else was up to at that time.
Yeah.
And so, like, and these are always, like, hidden, like, it's the Hellfire Gala, but it was in, like, New Mutants number 7, like
right,
of 7th edition, because we've started it over like 3 times since 2019. It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
somebody put the map out.
Yeah, I went to a comic book store a couple of weeks ago, and I was like looking at the books. I was like, I have no idea what's going on in these X-Men books. Like, not a clue. Like, yeah. I mean, I see stuff online. Like, oh yeah, Magneto was dead. They brought him back. Okay, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's like,
You got to wait till like a bundled edition or something comes out, and even then, it's like it's hard to follow.
Yeah, and so all I know is they're not on Krakoa anymore. Like that.
I do know how they killed Magneto.
No, what happened? Spoiler
alert. I think it was, well, maybe I don't know how, but I know that like there was, I think it was, there was a thing that popped up to judge everybody, and they were going to be decided whether or not they were judging everybody, and it was going to determine the fate of humanity. So he had to fight somebody, and he got like stabbed through the heart, and he was using his Magneto powers to keep his blood flowing to continue the fight, and then he died. But he had taken him and Storm had taken their genetic DNA out of the Krakoan database. So,
oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, he's back.
They were on Arrakko or whatever.
Yes. The other Mars. Whatever. Anyway. Yeah. Speaking of which, okay. Rogue declines, y'all. You know, after they share their La Bamba, the forbidden dance here, she's like, you know what? I can't do this. I don't want to. You know, and as she's like getting out of that particular situation, all hell is about to break loose on Genosha. And you start to hear like this voice,
psychic.
Yeah, the psychic. Psychic get kind of taken out a little bit. Jean gets taken out. Madeline gets taken out. And then you hear voices from Cable, like, you know, telling everybody to get out. He's coming. He's coming. And, you know, he sees Madeline and acknowledges that, you know, sorry, mom, or whatever. And then, boom, like everything happens. Mm-hmm. Now, this is why I think people are calling it the Mutant Massacre. But we know it's not the Mutant Massacre. This is the what happened literally in those comic books. Right. Like where this freaking three-headed mutated sentinel comes to Genosha and just starts to wipe everybody out. It is E for Extinction. I mean, this is almost a direct lift from the damn comic book.
Yeah.
So, you know, props to that. But yeah, this is not anticipated. Did not see this coming.
No, like because it still had a, you know, kind of light. Like they did, like we thus far they've shown us like the Demon Queen and Taylor and tamped that down. So this, you're still feeling like this is, you know, essentially a kid show, despite the fact that they're going deep into like these X-Men personalities and people and stuff like that's
right.
You know, No, this is a turn.
Yeah, very much so. And then,
the initial attack that the most amazing part of it was just the sound, like because they do the whole like you're waking up from a concussion, and meanwhile all hell's still breaking loose, and just that like that initial attack, and then coming out of it, like what the heck is happening?
Yeah,
it was great.
Yeah, no, they did an amazing job with this, and then they start wiping out some of these mutants into dust. Like, you know, you see people running away, and they're completely get dusted. The creator of the show, also one of those people, he drew himself in there. Not the creator, the writer of the show. And it was, like, completely unexpected, and, you know, it sets off this event where everybody has to, you know, start to run. And this is, you know, when they finally get together, you know, Magneto's rescue efforts are like he's trying to get everybody to the gardens, or they're trying to get everybody to the gardens, and then they need to go, you know, handle this thing. And so we get this team up of Rogue and Gambit, Mr. and Mrs. X, you know, where they married him off in the comic book. This was a perfect moment. And I was like, yeah, more of this. Like the idea of actually having these two characters together fighting as opposed to seeing them fall in and out of love with one another. Like, yeah, we needed to see more of this. They've done such a good job of making Rogue not this person in the comic books. Like, they're, you know, she's an Avenger, she's A-Force, she's like all of the leader of the team, like all these things, but we never get to see it because she's always, you know, Cody, Gambit, Masha, you know what I mean? Like, let's see her kick ass because she is a freaking nigh invulnerable mutant.
Yeah.
And then
she may not be at Omega level, but she's definitely an A-lister.
Right, yeah, and then Gambit, you know, the show reduced him really essentially to, you know, card tricks and you know, one-liners. You know, you never really get a chance to see him go off, and they do both of those things here, which I thought was great. Like, I was like, oh, great. Like, I mean, Gambit riding a motorcycle, that's the most perfect thing ever.
Yeah. Like, as soon as you got on that, I was like, oh, he's blowing that shit up.
Yeah.
That motorcycle ain't gonna make it.
Yeah, I was like, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. And y'all, we've been waiting for these types of moments or whatever. And then the tone of the show, like, once they it goes, I know your color scheme here, where it goes kind of red.
Yeah.
Like, completely, like, it was like, oh, you changed the complete palette of the show for the last 7 minutes of it. Like, this is this shit costs some money.
Yeah. I did read an article where we were talking about how when you have Disney money, you can do a lot.
Yeah, yeah. They wasn't repeating panels here, y'all. No, yeah. I just throw it in the back. No, they were not, sir. Yeah. They spent some money on this shit.
No, the tone and the feelings that this show evoked was amazing. And I think we've, even though we've lobbed complaints at, you know, certain parts of the show up till now, this was like, I never thought I would see this. I never thought I was getting a cartoon like this, let alone like, this would have been worse as like a live action, in my opinion. But
yeah, agreed.
I never expected to see something as good as what we saw in this episode 5.
Agreed. Just an absolute amazing bit, you know? And then Magneto's going to make the ultimate sacrifice, you know? Omega level threat detected again. Yeah. And, you know, people online were like, oh, Gamma's Omega level. No, he's not.
No.
It's Magneto, y'all. What are
he's
y'all?
He's like beta level.
Yeah. I'm like, what are y'all doing, y'all? You know, as he gets, you know, kind of saved by Nightcrawler, kind of pushing the people out of the way, you know, he winds up with the Morlocks trying to save them. And, you know, he's get under heavy attack from this freaking mutant Sentinel. And he's, you know, going to make the ultimate sacrifice, you know, with Leech there. And, you know, Leech had been like, you know, kind of treated Magneto as like a superhero that they had alluded to in the earlier part of the episode, you know, so it was kind of fitting that he was there. And yeah, man,
when he uses the train, like he's assaulting the Wild Sentinel with a train, and again, the sound that goes along with that, awesome.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, Leech was like, when they're getting attacked in the sewers, he's like, oh, don't worry, Magneto said we didn't have to be afraid.
Yeah.
And then Magneto tells him, and he switches to German, you don't have to be afraid anymore. It's for a different reason than Leech was thinking. You don't have to be afraid because we about to die.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and again, you have these Morlocks that's a callback to the show, the previous show. You know, I mean, well done, folks. Like, I mean, this was as good as a cartoon animated superhero show that you're gonna see. Like, take it out of like, oh, the fact that it's in like this series of shows, like as a one-off, you're gonna have a hard time finding an episode that was this good.
I would, you know, I don't know that we've ever talked about this, but that first Ultimate Avengers cartoon when they were
the movie,
before when they were trying to when they were making DVDs or VHS, whatever, before they got in Cinematic Universe, like this, you know, that the back half of that, once they started fighting the Hulk, you know, was the same kind of tone and scope and quality of show that they never replicated in that run of material. Yeah. But like, this is
Ultimates too.
Yeah, this is like up there with that. And that was great.
Yeah, I was like, this is well done. And that's, I said, the other thing I was thinking the entire time was, oh, they definitely took a lot of time and effort and money into this because this is great. Now again, you know, spinning ahead, you know, maybe Leech took his powers, but that doesn't really solve the idea that he's gonna be dead, because that freaking Sentinel laid that thing out. I don't know about all that. So yeah, it's just great. So Magneto goes out, he's gone. And then Gambit goes out like an absolute G, y'all. Capital G. We've talked about this on a long podcast. If you listen to our Game of Thrones stuff where Lady Olenna went out like a G, this was on that level of going out like a G, y'all.
Yeah.
Like, he heads towards that big old thing, and, you know, he gets freaking stabbed or gutted by whatever bit there. But yeah, remember it. you know, as he charges that thing up and then blows that thing to smithereens or whatever.
Yeah, because Rogue sees Magneto die and she's in a fit of rage. But realistically, like, Rogue can't beat this thing. All she can do is hit it, and Magneto's been doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So he finally charges the motorcycle, chucks it at her.
Yep.
And
gets her out of the way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then, yeah, this was great. And the delivery of the line.
Yes.
The name is Kent.
Remember it. Yes. Yeah. I kind of never
saw a Gambit story like this. Like, this is better than any story any Gambit story I can recall from the books, other than
a
panel at a time, whatever. This was amazing. And did not see this coming.
Hutch's biggest thing about Gambit continually, he's like, he's so 2D, like, he doesn't, you know, have any depth or whatever to the character. Mm-hmm. And he's not wrong fully, especially in the cartoon. Like, he's just, again, there to throw a card and say a funny line, and then that's mm-hmm. it. We never really get any, and even in the story, you know, about thieves and assassins, because it's so ridiculous, you can't really even get into that idea of it. And this, you know, okay, hey man, you rectified this character and made him good, and then you killed him. Like, whoa, like, what are we doing here? Does make a sort of appearance in episode 6 if you're spinning ahead, sort of. But yeah, it's just a great moment, like, overall. And then the end, you know, I can't feel you, when Rogue goes to, you know, pick him up out of the rubble, I can't feel you. But then they double down. The freaking theme song, Head Out, bro. They slowed it down.
They're like, see you next week, psych. This is it. They all did.
Yeah. It was like, what are we doing? Like, I was like, oh my goodness. Sad ass credits. You know, I was like, wow. And then you spin it forward to episode 6. Again, if we're not going to fully talk about it here. If you spin it forward, they take him and Magneto out of the intro.
Yep.
And then add Nightcrawler to it, you know, because Nightcrawler's going to be on the team now. Like, I see you. I really do. Well done.
I mean, as much as, like, dying X-Men has been a trope, like, outside of, you know, in the actual comic 136, and even to some extent the cartoon version of it, none of the movies, but, you know, the death of Phoenix, I think, always carries weight. And it's difficult to do wrong, although they've figured out a way to do it
continually.
You know, as much as X-Men dying was a trope, like, this is in whatever medium, like, the only ever time I felt like I felt a death of the X-Men, this was rough, dude.
Yeah. Oh no, that was a very they snapped everybody out of existence in Avengers moment. It was like,
yeah,
wait, for real?
Yeah.
Is that it? What do you mean? Why are you rolling credits?
And the other thing they did too was, you saw, like, the old trope is, if you don't see the body, they showed you a lot of bodies.
Yeah,
like,
they did.
Mm. I think they showed Moira, Callisto. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the White Queen, but definitely Sebastian Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do get the white in the comics. This is where White Queen gets her diamond form. Yes, that's how she survives. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they were like, no, here's the bodies, in case you were wondering.
They did.
Like, they used Nightcrawler as a fake out a lot, and the presumption that he's...
He got the hit and roll, hit and roll there, you know, but well done. I got no complaints, so, you know, 5 stars, no comments.
Yeah.
Well done.
And also, then, like, my complaint about episode 3 was just how they, you know, they burned through it, but... you know, they actually tied Madeline in. It made, you know, there was something to say, and they continued the story of the three of them. So, you know, I'm with it.
Yeah. And then to spin a forward to episode 6, like, man, you ended that episode 5, blah, 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 blah. Man, they got to follow up on. Nope. You got to wait.
Yeah.
And then they're starting again, essentially X-Men 275.
Yeah.
You know, with a story about Xavier being the consort to Lilandra with Deathbird and all of that. And I read through those books here, like, over the last couple of days. There's an interesting story in there too. I'm very curious as to how you're going to spin it. You know, spoiler alert, if you never read those books, it's the Skrulls. I'm kind of curious if that's what we're going to get here, because now, even though you have Skrulls through the MCU, we haven't had Skrulls like this. Maybe they're the evil ones. Maybe they're the bad ones and through the cartoon. And,
yeah, but the extent of the way he's used his powers, that's Xavier.
No, I don't know. So I don't know. So that's why I said that 275, they're definitely taking some liberties. But if you're wanting to go back and see where the comic book inspiration is, that's definitely a good place to start.
And the other old school, when he comes back from the Shi'ar, he's a Brood King or whatever as well. Mm. It's the other thing they haven't burned through yet. So.
Yeah. So help me out here. You're better at finding this. What is episode 7's title then?
Oh, Bright Eyes.
And so that has to be a Cyclops. Well,
I would think so.
Or is that a Cable story?
Oh, could be. I thought I saw.
I thought Bright Eyes was a Cable pull.
It's Scott's doing something, and I can't remember what. But it's the team is going to do something with Scott. But that could very well be the case. Mm-hmm. And have you seen the cameo of a certain non-mutant in the previews?
No,
they're showing Captain America's shield in
previews. Oh, okay.
Now I'm like, can morph into the shield? What's happening?
I thought I'd put it in here, and we're at 55 minutes, so we'll wrap this up as the last piece. I tweeted this, and I'd feel very confident about it, even watching this again and talking this throughout with you. We getting Krakoa. Like, this is there is not a chance in hell that we're not getting Krakoa. When I'm watching Xavier give his astral plane speech there in episode 6, I'm like, he's setting this up like to get us to this point. Once he sees that Gambit's dead and all these people, he's like, F it. We're not doing this.
Mm-hmm.
That's the final chapter to get him, like, whatever it took in the comic books to get him to be like, you know what, Magneto, you was right. Enough of this already.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing too, which was introduced in the Morrison books, is Cerebra,
mm-hmm.
which is the thing that he's wearing on his head when they go to Krakoa. So
that's the black Cerebra.
Yes, exactly. So I'm just saying, La Cerebra. So
Cerebra.
Cerebra. Sorry, bro. So I think that's where we're headed. Like, I feel very confident. Whether you think they can pull it off or not, that's a completely different story.
I mean, look at the hoops they're having to jump through to try and take you through the X-Men. Because, the Avengers, they're basically like, yeah, it's a rotating team. They fought stuff. There's a couple highlights, but basically they're still doing the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
X-Men, like the evolution of the characters and the teams and the individuals, like they all are linked to these stories that don't make sense. Like if you sit down and try and explain, like even Cyclops or Jean, Cable, you can't explain to somebody who doesn't read comics and be like, you start and you're like, oh, forget it, just whatever, it was this and this. So like, it feels like the hoops they're jumping through to like try and get everybody up to speed and try all these together and get the characters to kind of their fullest potential, the Krakoa was like regarded as the X-Men are good again, and they tied everything together for a fresh start. And it seems like that's the way it kind of has to come into the MCU, because you either have to pick a point in time and go with it. And if they go in the past, it's not going to make any sense. So it definitely seems like this is very quickly trying to bridge through a ton of continuity to get them to a point where they can come into the MCU.
It just feels like, oh, now he's definitely going to, it's either that, and I don't know the titles or whatever, it's either he goes there and that's where we're headed, or they're going to tell this Onslaught story because, that maybe that breaks Xavier, the kids all dying and everybody dead, and that just breaks him and it unleashes his whatever dark side.
Well,
and again, but how do you get out of that though too is the other story.
Yeah, but that could also, they could very easily turn Onslaught into Cassandra Nova.
Yeah.
Feels like we cannot escape Cassandra Nova.
You don't think so? Yeah. But again, we're in our mid-30s at this point when those books come, early 30s, excuse me, when those books come out. So we're old-ish in comic book reader world. But the people that grew up on those books, they hold that shit in high regard. You know what I mean? Like, it if you started reading the X-Men when you were 20-something, and then those books came up, it's probably not that big of a stretch. Or if that's where you jumped on, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? Because you finally got income to support your habit. What would you think that was any bit differently or whatever? It's like, oh, it's a new team, new millennium, new whatever, you know, whatever. I'm like, this is where I'm at. And so you're okay with all, like, the... I call them useless mutants because they are. There's like, let's just draw them as freaks. Like in that episode, the first episode, he's got the dude with three faces that him and Cyclops and Wolverine went to go rescue. What's his mutant power? Oh, I'm just ugly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, the idea that not every mutant is a superhero is completely valid. It makes sense. Right. But then.
Yeah. It just. Yeah.
It's basically just the Morlocks.
Yes, exactly. Again, I think we could have probably gotten through if it was not the Quietly art. I think we could have made it through, like, yeah. especially in a team book. Because when I look at what was that run on Superman? Is that All-Star Superman? When I look at it, I don't hate it as much. I do because he's still got the melted faces, but like, it's not as bad because it's not a team book.
I think it was that, to me, that's the onset of, we're going to let the creators, we no longer expect the creators to really take into consideration the
history,
the 200 episode run of Chris Claremont,
right,
that has established the Bible for these characters. Just do whatever you want
within these guardrails. Yeah, and then we'll just retcon it later. Yeah,
and we'll do that for 15 months at a time at most, and then we'll do it over, and we'll do it over, and do it over. And that's where, like, you know, the hallmark of the books was that it was one continuity of these characters throughout that came and went and still made sense. And that was shattered, I think, starting here. And then it's like, well, now I don't even know who they are.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. All right. So when we come back for us, we're going to do Life Death 1 and 2. I think we're probably just going to skip over that Jubilee Mojo story because
it was fine.
Yes. Yeah. It is what it is, but it makes no sense. It's just useless. Probably their biggest misstep. So we'll tie Life Death together, and then we'll get into episode 6, which is this, you know, the Milky Way ghetto, which was trending on Twitter, whatever. And again, we're going to tie that back into the comic books that inspired this arc here, because with Deathbird taking such a prominent role in his, she does have a prominent role in those books that we were starting in Uncanny, because this is her this is when her and Bishop get together. This is, she's, you know, this idea of saving the Shi'ar Empire at this particular time when the lands are not around. So we'll come back to that and kind of tie, you know, those together so we can get through it. And then that other X-Men book is just ass. But anyway, different conversation. All right, y'all. So again, podcast, iTunes, YouTube, all of those types of things. You know where to find it if you're seeing this anyway. Thanks for the 3 new subscribers we got this past week. I'm very happy about that. Woo! Wow, man. We're up to 119. So
wow.
We're flying through. So yeah, we'll keep it going, and we'll see you guys next time. Say goodnight, Brother Beavis, or good morning, or
peace.
Something.
See you next time.
We can do that too. Good night, everybody.